Alice Malcolm in her house in Giffnock on Tuesday the 11th of March. And tell me your name, your age.
2014.
2014. You're going to tell me your name and your age, and then we're going to basically talk about your life story. So,
Very good. I am, as declared, Mrs. Alice Malcolm, and I am 89, and I hope to celebrate my 90th birthday in August.
Okay, so basically I'm going to ask you to just talk through your life story, and I will prompt you if you stop. So start at the beginning. Tell me about growing up, tell me about your family, your background, where it all started.
Well, I was born in Vienna. My mother was Viennese. My father came from Istanbul, Turkey. Unfortunately, my father died young, and my mother was a very young widow. And she, in those days, young women didn't work, but my mother had to work, and she was extremely talented and very beautiful. And so she had various jobs. 1936, I went to the same school as where my mother went. In 1936, I was 12, and Hitler's Nazi regime was raging in Germany. Everybody in Austria was worried. Well, my mother at that time was working in a political office, which was social democratic, it would be called here now. And she was called by her boss into the office with windows and doors closed and locked. Basically, she was told that although on the front the office was still democratic, they were already taken over by the Germans, and he would have to dismiss her at once. And if she did not leave Austria within the week or yesterday, if possible, both she and he would be dead meat. He declared that he would destroy all records of her having worked there because she was Jewish, and he understood that she was a widow. I came home from school that day, not to home, because I always went to the business which my grandmother ran. And my mother, to my surprise, was sitting there telling my grandmother what I have just said. So, Mum took me, snow white in the face as she was then, by the hand to buy an international newspaper. I think it was the London Times. And from there, we went a winding staircase to an English teacher, to whom she said, "Find me a job at once. The only way I can get out of here is by going into domestic service in England." He did, and when we left there, we went to a photographer to get the passport photo. I was inwardly shaking. That is the only idea that I had, that I was going to be on my own, no mother, no father. But I was already living with my grandmother. My mother left very, very quickly, and I continued at school for 2 more years.
Wow.
Nobody knew that Hitler was coming in 1938, except me. However, I was in a class of 40. 20 of us were Jewish. We normally didn't really mix very well with the non-Jewish girls, and they didn't mix well with us, but we were not with pistols at the ready. Well, from there on, I start my life that you want to know now. I just continued at school and corresponded with my mother. She obviously was not expected or wanted to come back, but she was a heroine. She came back to warn her own friends and my friend's parents if they had any relatives to let the children go. We were not allowed to see her. She did not live at home because we didn't know who in civilian was already a Nazi. I found out later that my grandmother's next door neighbor came out the day Hitler marched in full SS uniform.
Wow.
His mother was a friend of my grandmother's. They both came from the same village, but we didn't know until that day that her son, and I wonder whether she even was aware of it. However, that was it. 1938 came. The shock to me was so severe. My brother was not with my grandmother and me at that time. And when he came the following morning, he asked me what happened to me. I said nothing. I was in the house with grandmother, who had earphones and turned pure white when Schuschnigg, who was the president of Austria, announced on the radio, "God bless Austria, you are now being taken over by the Nazi regime," and poof! I heard the bang through the earphones. They shot him because of what he said. My brother said...
And she turned white?
Yes.
Her hair?
She turned... she had high colour, but she was in bed with the earphones. Now, my brother said, "Go to the mirror and see what happened to you." I went to the mirror and I saw my cat green eyes that everybody remarked on had changed colour. I didn't realise the depth of the shock that I personally received. But we carried on going to school, coming home and taking the remarks we got from other pupils. Then...
Remarks like what?
"Don't speak to me, just don't associate." There was one little girl, she was very small, and she was the baker's daughter who was very ill. She had broken glands. Mumps had broken through, and she was very sweet, and she sort of whispered to me, "You can still come and buy cakes." But as for the rest, we knew we had to get out. The very next day, I saw what nobody should see, leave alone a child. There were adults, men with hats and coats, in particular Jewish-looking men, religious people, climbing monuments with a toothbrush in their hand, and they had to scrub the top of the monuments with a toothbrush, and heaven help them if it weren't done properly. I stood only for a minute and then ran away. But what did I run into? Across the road from where we lived, with my grandmother then, was a leather shop. The man who owned the shop hung himself with his leather. And various other things. When the bad weather came along, I found out that I couldn't skate anymore. With a shock, I lost my balance. Not just the colour of my eyes. At school, I was very wiry. I could swing off the monkey wings, whether there was a safety net or not. I could run on the planks, whether they were high or low. I had no balance. I could do none of it anymore, and it never, ever came back. The way things were not pleasant, to say the least, I wrote a letter to my mother. I said, if I don't get out of here quickly, I will never get out. My brother didn't live with us because it was obvious that men were taken away very quickly. And people actually said that the Austrians went mad like the Germans never did.
Wow.
The Germans did things by strategy. The Austrians just let their wrath go wherever. There were some that were helpful, like my grandmother did, sold jewelry, put it into pawn, beautiful linen that she had, and she traded that for food for us. You can ask me what you want to know. I can't carry on unless you ask me.
Okay, so tell me a bit about your Jewish life in Austria before all this.
Oh, well, I lived very near to the Reform Synagogue that was called Tempelgasse, and the beadle, the shamus of the Orthodox Synagogue, which was in the third district, and we lived in the second district. The Orthodox Synagogue beadle always invited me, because his daughter bore the same name as me, Alice, and we were friends. So he always invited me. But Jewish life was what I made myself. School was 7 days, but on a Saturday we went in the mornings and to the temple in the afternoons. And the Reformed temple was filled to capacity with children, because many schools had you come in from 8 till 1.
But you, there were, did you have then the Hanukkahs and candles, Shabbat candles and anything like that?
When we could afford it, because we didn't have much money and we didn't have much of anything. What we, my grandmother traded for us to be kept alive, and was as cheerful as she could be and cheered us up. That...
So tell me, so the two next things then are, if you couldn't bear it, what became of your grandmother, and then your journey to Britain?
Well, my mother went to office in London. She was, in when she first came to London, into domestic service in the post that was arranged for her to have a, the only way that she could get an entrance permit, because it was quotas. Britain took in people by quota number, and she eventually got permission from the office, which was called the Interaid Jewish Office for Children.
For what? Interaid, all right.
Jewish Office for Children. She eventually managed to get a permit for me to come. But before that, during that time, sometime, the people she was working for turned out to be British Nazis.
Wow.
And she had a very, very bad time there. On the point of collapse, she went, had the good circle to go. She didn't speak English, to go into an agent and asked for another job. She was sent to Northwood in Middlesex to Scottish people, which was wonderful. The gentleman was not Scottish, but the lady was. So I eventually got the permit in 1938 at the end of my school year and packed a small trunk, mistakenly with books from school, and my grandmother gave me a cushion to sit in the corridor train, which was third class, and a bottle of water, because the Viennese water was rated very high, and a little berry, crocheted berry for my mother. That's all I had to, we could afford to bring. So Mummy was working for the people in Northwood, and I arrived. My uncle, my mother's brother, took me to the station. That's the last I saw of him at that time, with an SS man on either side of him. It was an ordinary civilian train. Nazis were on it in uniform. Civilians were on it. You didn't know who was who, but you could tell a refugee somehow. Because other people were coming on domestic services as well. I was very happy to think I was going to see my mother and had taken my curlers with me. I thought ahead, and the hat I was wearing I sewed on tapes so that I could keep the curlers in and keep the hat on top. When we got to the borders of Austria and Germany, the train was stopped, and every Jewish person was hauled out. They came in and took you out. And a lot of people had permits, but a lot of people didn't. Those who had permits, I think most of them were allowed back on the train. It depended, I suppose, on what they considered. But when everybody was hauled out, I stayed put. When they said heraus, I was deaf. And I suppose I looked a little bit mad.
With your curlers.
And very small, insignificant, that I was not taken out. So I stayed put. Wherever the train was going, I was in it.
Wow.
Those who came back were going the same way as me, but I didn't really know that. It was nighttime, time to have your curlers in and go to sleep. Sleep evaded me, as it had done for a long time. They were already shouting. There were various ships, I didn't know which one was shouting, "We're leaving," in French. I had a smattering of French. Well, I finally decided I couldn't slip the case, I'll go on to a ship. I went on the ship, and the, what do you call that man that stands up?
Like a purser or something.
Yeah. He saw my permit and said, "We are just leaving, get off quick, you're on the wrong ship." "Which way should I go?" I was able to say that in French. And he pointed me back. Not where I had walked on, but back. And I was on the English ship.
Wow.
But I didn't know anybody. I didn't know whether I should stay, where I was standing. No, they shut the gates and shoved me in. The ship was full to capacity. And off we went. I was expecting and hoping that my mother would meet me in Dover. It was not a long sail. It was a very short sail. But when the ship stopped, it was Dover. And people were shouting, they were coming, they were going, they were getting off the ship. And somebody was shouting, Alice Levy, Alice Levi, Levy Alice. But my grandmother had told me, you don't speak to anyone. And even when you eventually settled in your new home, never discuss politics, never say what happened.
Wow.
So I stayed stum. They called me, but I didn't know. I am Alice. I am Alice. I didn't know I was Levi. I was Levi. So everybody got off except me. Then I eventually got off. And there, at the port, was my mother with the same fellow who had been calling me, but I didn't know. He was consoling her that I will be there somewhere. But she was afraid that I hadn't arrived. And he was consoling her. And then when I got off and she was there with her friend who was my... We always knew her as Auntie. It was her friend. My mother got her out on one of the occasions when she came home. Again, on a domestic permit.
Okay, here's a question. How on earth did, with those days, because I'm so used to mobile phones and the internet, how on earth could your mother have possibly known which train you were going to be able to get?
My grandmother, I found out afterwards, my mother was so upset that she sent a telegram to my grandmother, who sent a telegram back, poor soul, on counted pennies she spent on a telegram, to say I had left.
Right.
More than that, she didn't know.
So she was just waiting for each boat. Wow. Okay, so from Dover to Scotland. That's a long story. Dover to London first.
I was... Yes, my mother was allowed to bring me to her new employers. The lady was from Glasgow. And the gentleman was English. Now, I was allowed to stay with her.
The Northwest?
Western Polytechnic.
Northwest Polytechnic in Kentish Town, yeah.
In Kentish Town.
Mm-hmm.
But I was to live in Dix in Kendal Rise.
Right.
That lady was taking in refugee children, and the committee paid for us. It was eking out her livelihood in London.
Yeah.
She was from Manchester. So this was me hearing different accents.
Right.
But I was sent to her from my mother's employer with a carload of roses from their garden.
Wow.
And when my mother introduced me to that Scottish lady, I kept shaking her hand because I didn't know it wasn't custom to kiss a lady's hand. So the lady was laughing. Until my mother said to me in German, that's enough. So I went to school. I was not at school for very long when the war broke out. In those days, people selling papers were running round the streets. Austria is Germany. Austria in the war with Britain, Britain's at war. And I was terribly upset. What's going to happen to my grandmother? I was already in bed in my digs, and I ran into the street as I was in my nightdress. There again I got told off. Not often I got told off, but I did get told off. How dare you come out in your nightdress? Get back in there. That was my landlady. She meant well. Mm. She was a Jewish lady, and she entertained a lady who had come also from Vienna and had nobody to go to. And she used to invite her to sit by the fireside on her half day. And she ordered me to get back. I was very upset, very upset. Well, not immediately. Immediately, school continued in London. Gas masks were handed out. Mm. My headmistress took a liking to me right from the start. Her name was Gertrude Armstrong. She supervised. I was to get a uniform like all the others. Mm-hmm. I guess she sent the bill to the office. I don't know that. But I had a uniform with my badge, of which I was very proud. I had a velour hat to match my uniform in the winter, and a Panama hat for the summer, little white gloves, and a blue gingham dress in the summer. And at the weekends, Saturday, I went to look for a synagogue. From Kensal Rise, I walked to the next district. I think it was called Queen's Park.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a synagogue. Mm-hmm. I went in, went up to the gallery. It was not very busy, so I sat in the front row and looked around, and on the side gallery I saw one of my Viennese classmates. I was ecstatic inside myself, waited for the service to finish, and then singled her out. Her name was Erika Neumann. And she told me that she's with a nice young Jewish couple. And she told me to follow her home and I would be able to visit her then. Well, I followed her home. It was not terribly far from my day. And another day, I think, probably wasn't on the Sunday. On Sunday, I used to visit my mother.
Mm-hmm.
But when I did go, the lady who, I think they adopted her,
yeah,
she came to the door and said I had never to come again,
yeah,
because she is now a London girl and she is not to speak German or have anything to do with me or anyone from the past. Wow. She is now their daughter. I did not attempt to find her. It was by chance, but from that day onwards I never attempted to find anyone.
Wow.
I did go to the office that helped my mother to bring me, to try and bring my grandmother over. But they said they have so many children to rescue that there was no chance. Well, the Blitz started in London. And we had to be evacuated. I don't know how it came about, but I was to go to Luton with a few of my classmates. One of them was a Cockney girl,
mm-hmm,
Susan, with rosy cheeks, small. I was also small. And we sort of sat together, but my English was not very good yet. However, we arrived. I don't know what happened to my case that I brought from Austria. I have no idea what happened to any of my things. I think I rescued one of the books, or two of the books, but I don't know what happened to anything else. Anyway, we arrived in Luton, and each class had their own teacher, whose responsibility it seemed to get the pupils accommodated somewhere. Mrs. Titwood was my head teacher, and I was put into a house, a little house. Became evening, we had something for high tea, and we were put to the bedroom. We had to share a double bed. The lady knelt at the side of Susan's bed, gave her an apple to eat, to clean her teeth with, and said to Susan, "Repeat after me." And it was the Lord's Prayer, which was said at school. Then she came to me, gave me the apple, and said, "Alice, you repeat after me now." Upon which I said, "Thank you very much, but I am Jewish." "What? No Jew shall have shelter in my house."
Wow.
"In the morning you are out." And so I was. I had only a little case and my gas mask. Mrs. Titwood came and said, "I've been informed of what took place, and I've been trying all morning to find you accommodation. But because you're Jewish, I had great difficulty."
Wow. And she told you that? Lovely.
She had to tell me, because there was a small Jewish community, but they wouldn't have me either.
Heard a lot about that.
It may be that it was a second home to them, that they had just taken it on to escape from London, because people from London travelled to Luton, and they had businesses in London or jobs or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, she said, "I have only just found a home for you. You are the only person they're going to take in as a result of what I told them." The name was Elcorn, A-L-C-O-R-N. They had one little daughter called Pamela. Wouldn't it be nice if I met her? And they were lovely people. The gentleman worked for a biscuit company, and they were absolutely lovely to me. Unfortunately, the lady suffered from arthritis, and she was only a young woman, pretty lady, but I was allowed to help her in the kitchen. School only took place once a week, which we shared with the high school in Luton. We met every day under the bandstand in the park and often got soaked. But this once a week was most interesting, because it was not to learn anything, but it was art.
Right.
And there was another Jewish girl in my school in London who was evacuated, but she was not in my class. And she was a lovely featured girl, and she was this day made the model to sit in the art class, and we had to draw her, and mine won the prize. I was so thrilled with that. Inge, her name was. She was German, and she didn't last. I don't know whether her parents took her back to London or what, but she did not last. It was not a very happy time. We were knitting there. I knitted a pair of gloves, and it was so cold that I was shriveled up, and the knitting was so tight, and I've disliked knitting ever since. I still hunch my shoulders if I try to knit. I don't know how or why, but somehow it came about that my headmistress had been in touch with my teacher and had said to her that camps were being organized for refugees. They were called aliens, friendly aliens.
Mm.
And she thought that I would have to go into one of those camps, although it was not legal until a certain age, but they didn't know what to do with me, so they thought I would have to go there. So the headmistress found titled people, Admiral and Lady Mead Featherstone Hall. Featherstone Hall in an estate in Petersfield.
Mm-hmm.
The estate is now on view to the public. It's called Up Park, mm-hmm. UPPER, because it's on view, Aidan told me.
Right, wow.
He wanted to take me, I said, no way. Mm-hmm. Well, I was taken in to be a kitchen maid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they entertained the Queen, and I could look out from the basement and see the Queen Mother and all the nobility. The men used to come into the kitchen with rabbits to be cooked, skinned and cooked for their dogs. I learned how to skin a rabbit. Wow. Because I was the kitchen maid. And I was to be a help to the chef and the assistant chef, who was a Hungarian lady called Veronica Krauss. But she was not Jewish. She was a very staunch Catholic. I have never yet met the chef because he was permanently drunk and never ever showed up. And so it fell upon Veronica to do all the cooking and entertaining for the nobility, and on me to do all the cleaning of the vegetables, as well as the scrubbing of the corridors. So I used to get up at 6 in the morning to do the cleaning of the corridors, which housed the troops on their way. And they had nowhere to go. There was no toilets or anything for them. And I had to clean that up before I started cleaning the vegetables for everybody. The plus was that Lady Mead sometimes asked me upstairs to find out different things about me. She was interested. When I cut myself and it went septic, she took me to the doctor. She had me registered so I wouldn't have to go into one of the refugee camps.
Mm.
And Veronica always gave me double helpings of food, and I put on weight. But when it came to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, I hadn't seen a Jewish face in a long, long time. I wrote to the committee and said that I would like to attend a service. Where could I find such a thing? The answer came back. Everything was done by letters. Mm-hmm. There was no phones. There were phones, but not for me.
Yeah.
And she had written to tell me that somebody would meet me in Petersfield, because Up Park is in the country, in beyond the village. Petersfield was the nearest town, and she told me where to go in Petersfield. Of course, I was getting paid, so I had money for a bus, but the butler said he would take me. Little did I know, I would be pillion riding on a motorbike. I hung onto him, around my arms, round his waist, for dear life, down the hill and up the dale. And then he just drove away. I met that lady, and she was not Jewish. And she took me to a Jewish house where the service was to take place. Right. There were not many people, enough to fill a little house. And I looked towards the back, and there was a kitchen. I heard somebody groaning, and I went in. And it was a young woman, pregnant. I didn't know anything about what to do in a case like that, but I was willing. Now, in later years, I found out the lady was the sister of who became the rabbi's wife in Gifnok.
Mm.
How's that? And then I went into the service, which upset me terribly. Not for myself, but because of the woman who was there sobbing. Her little boy had just been killed by an accident in the street. I thought my problems were none at all. Anyway, I stayed, and they said, you cannot go back because it's Yom Kippur. That was Yom Kippur. You stay here. And I shared room with Hubi. Mm. I shared bed with who became Rabbit Snubenstein. Well, I stayed there in domestic service for a while. During that time, the people my mother was working for in Northwood, the lady being Scottish, said to my mother, you can stay here and get another job or whatever, or you can come with us to Scotland. Well, they had been very, very good to my mother and me, because I was allowed to visit her every Sunday, and she was allowed to wash my uniform together when she did their laundry. So I was always spotless at school, and she went with them to Glasgow. So one day, I wrote a letter to my mother with her and said, I would like to be where you are. Can you find a way? And there was such an office for refugees in Glasgow, Paul O'Kuehl's. And she wrote back to me, yes, you can, but you would have to work in the same position as where elsewhere, but here. So I thanked the people and left with my little case on my own to London. I took a train from London and looked out the window as we approached Glasgow. It was a long journey in those days, and everything looked so black. The buildings were very, very dirty from soot and smoke. Yes, it looked quite depressing, really. I don't know how I never noticed anything like that in Vienna. I don't know. I suppose I was more aware then. Well, I think I said that, yes, my mum's employers were very kind to me, and I was able to stay there, to come to visit on a Sunday, unless Mum sometimes came to London.
But you moved to Glasgow by then?
Yeah, but this is in Glasgow, yes.
Oh, I see. Right.
Yes, it was still the same people, yes. Now, what do you want from
me? So tell me about what happened when you came to Glasgow. What work did you do? Were you studying? This was still wartime, wasn't it?
Oh yes, it's very much wartime. When I went to see Miss Lehman, who was the secretary in the Paul O'Kuehl's office for refugees, she said, I would have to go into essential work, which is munition factory work, or she couldn't really say what I could do. And I said, well, I was at school being trained or getting training to become a chef. But of course, rationing, there's no food to cook anything with. But the other trades that were being taught were nursing, millinery, and tailoring. She said, the only thing that I could offer you of that lot is nursing, because it is essential. And I said, well, that I would like that. She said, it's being treated as if you were in the army. So I suggest that you don't go for training, but that you go into a nursing home just as a help. I had time 6 months before I would be 18 by that time. No, I was 17 when I came. So at 17, when I came to Glasgow, I needed a job for pocket money. And I was asked to be a nanny to a little boy who was Seymour, what was his name now? Diane Woolson's cousin.
Oh, wow.
And I was his nanny for several months. Seymour Gordon.
Yeah.
And then I applied for several nursing homes. And the one that I was recommended to, I had to have 2 recommendations. And I got one from the other Jewish lady who was a nurse in Clarkston, was Mrs. Livingston, and I got one from a doctor who knew my mother from Vienna, and he was a doctor in Stop Hill Hospital by that time. So I had recommendation from Mrs. Livingston and Dr. Horowitz. That was medical recommendations. And I went to present myself in a place that was a women's hospital and maternity called Redlands in the West End. And I was employed.
Yay!
Well, I didn't know anything about anything, but I became very familiar with all sorts of medical terms. My first job was in the nursing home, in the maternity home, on night duty. I was to stay behind a senior nurse called Taylor, who was very Glaswegian Scottish, and I couldn't understand a word she said. So instead of being like I was to you and saying, you gab too quick, I said, would you please teach me Scottish? And she said, I'll learn you Scottish, lass.
Oh, that's nice.
And she taught me some terrible words. And I didn't know they were terrible words. Then she told me what I had to do and instructed me to follow her into the bathroom, which was a slunge with a big sink and a big basket of soiled baby snappies. And there was a huge toilet brush, switch on the cold tap, and she said it in Glasgow bad words what I had to do. I'll say it in nice, the same words, but not in the Glasgow way. She said, you slunch the shite off the nappies, only she said, didn't say it like that. And I am learning the Scottish twang and repeating it with every nappy so it would stay in my mind. And the door opened and the night supervisor came. And she said, nurse! I was already being called nurse. I was so proud of myself, 17. What are you doing? And I practiced this the way she said it. Please, I'm slunging the shite out of the nappies. Don't write that. It's to you, to you. She turned purple and couldn't find anybody else to interview. Everybody disappeared. They were all laughing and disappeared. And that was the first Scottish word that I learned. Well, I stayed there and I visited Nurse Livingston. And one of the patients that was in the, not in the maternity, but in the hospital side of the home, was a beautiful lady who had a most beautiful pale blue nightdress with matching dressing gown. She was blonde, with blue eyes and most unusual features. And her name was Esther Green. I got to know her because she observed me. Unbeknown to me, I was doing whatever anybody asked me. I didn't know what my duties were and what they weren't. So whatever anybody asked me, I did. So I ended up doing everybody's duties, and they were having a lovely coffee or tea in the room. And one day, and I had work to do with these people. They were ill and they needed their dressings and things seemed to slant, you know. And one day she said to me, "You're a Jewish girl, aren't you?" She was Esther Green.
Mm-hmm.
She said, "I'm also Jewish." I couldn't believe it. She was blonde. Oh, I admired her negligee with her dressing gown to match. She said, "I did it myself."
Yeah.
I'm a designer and dressmaker. And she said, "I'd like you to visit me." Everybody asked me to visit them. And I said yes to everybody, and I knew I wouldn't go to anybody. So one day she was ready to go home and she was going to give me her address. And I said, "That's very kind of you, but thank God I have a mother here. And when I have time, if I go to see my mother." She said, "You can bring your mother. And I'll make you a dress."
Yeah.
The deal. That was the deal. I would come. And thereby developed the most wonderful relationship. We called ourselves cousins eventually.
Yeah.
Because her mother and my mother found a connection through the Sephardi side of my family.
Right.
So we never really found a solid confirmation of it, but it appears, and whether that had happened or not, we were fond of each other, and I had a most wonderful relationship with that family. They had one son with whom I'm friends to this day.
Right.
He lives in Bournemouth. And he says, "I am the only one who can talk to him about his time here."
Yeah.
Because he was only 8 years old then. And he's pushing 80 now.
So we do fast forward now, I think. So we do, well, then, we do the editor's highlight.
Nurse Livingston suggested I don't stay in Redlands, but that I apply for training. If I like nursing, I said, "I love it. I love the patients, but I don't like all the way the sisters are treating me." There was one or two who were real anti-Semitic. And when there was a Jewish doctor in charge of a ward, Nurse Livingston said to me, "Tell him in Yiddish, anti-Semit," and he'll give her a hard time. But I didn't do that, no. So I applied, and eventually I got my papers, and when I was 18, I started training. But it was not quite without a hustle, because the matron from Redlands was very peeved when she was short of staff. And I was a wonderful worker because I did everything everybody told me. Run 3 upstairs, 3 downstairs, go to the next block and attend to 20 or 30 patients. Took no time off. While I was in Redlands, I took ill as a result of that because one of the maids stole my Wellingtons. I had only one pair of shoes for the street, one pair of shoes for working, and one pair of Wellingtons, and she stole my Wellingtons. And when I went to see my mother, I had to wait in the snow with my legs bare, and I developed a very nasty rheumatism with bad throats, and I had to be hospitalized then. However, I got better and started my nurse's training in Stop Hill.
But you were going to say that the lady didn't want you to go because you were such
Yes, she didn't want me to go. She said, I'll give you a bad reference, you'll not get in. And I just smiled. I had a reference from Dr. Horowitz. Now I had to go, this is funny, so I'll put it in. I had to go for an interview with a matron who came from the Orkneys. Her name was Miss Tulloch. She had a long blue gown. Her veil was right at her eyebrows and her sleeves were down to her wrists. Dark brown eyes, and she had a deep voice like a man. And she gave a very frightening appearance to a poor little thing that I was. But I had to go for an interview, and I said to Dr. Horowitz, sorely as I knew him, what shall I say to her that'll give me favor? He said, you come from Vienna, just schmooze her. So I did that. And she laughed. She knew I was schmoozing her. She said, oh, you are very continental, nurse. But I did well there. I did my general and my midwifery.
Which hospital was that?
Stop Hill. All the hospitals are being closed.
General nursing and midwifery.
And midwifery with the anaesthetics, which you were obliged to take anyway, but I took it. You didn't want you, but everybody took it. And then into a nursing home as a sister's post, met my husband to be then at a dance when he was in naval uniform. We fell in love and got married. There's one thing I missed out the whole story, and it annoys me, that my mother worked for her employers for very little. If they would put up £100 to save my brother's life. And they did, and she did, and I helped. And my brother came one day during the war.
Wow. During the war you managed to get out?
No, I didn't.
So third take from
Alice? I worked in Milbury Nursing Home. And there's still a lady alive who calls me Sister Levy. And she comes to the Jewish care. And unfortunately, like me, she's very poor sight. And because I have made it to this age, so a lot of people here were my children that I helped to bring into the world.
So there were a lot of, because you were a midwife, there were a lot of Jewish families that you did.
And because I worked in the South Side then,
yes,
so a lot of people knew me. And all the doctors on the South Side knew Sister Levy.
So you were always Sister Levy, even when you got married, or you stopped nursing when you got married?
No, it didn't stop.
Okay, but you didn't change your name?
No, what I stopped was doing midwifery then,
right.
And I worked in the Victoria in gynecology because mm-hmm. I'd worked in Redlands.
Right.
So therefore midwifery and women's troubles
yeah.
I knew well.
Yeah.
That's how I met Esther, because I knew women's troubles.
Okay, so then you had two children.
Yes, but that doesn't...
You can still name your children in the tape, they're going to listen.
I see. Oh, well, yes, we got married and my husband was a naval officer in the Merchant Navy, and he had to swallow the anchor because I didn't want to be a wife without a husband. It's hard swallowing the anchor. It was very hard for him. He liked being at sea. It was not only a wartime job for him. He stayed on after the war. But when we got married, he worked for his father, which was a naval and gents outfitters.
Yeah.
Of course, he knew all the ranks and he knew a lot of the world.
Mm.
We had a son first, bless him, and a daughter later, bless her. And they are now almost pensioners like me. So I have enjoyed my new country.
Yeah.
I have never lost my foreign accent because when I was evacuated, I was in with so many different accents, I copied them all. In the end, I stayed in Scotland and I copied the Highland girls' accents, but as I have no contact with them, out comes my mother's accent. That can't be a bad thing. I think it's the best country in Europe for me.
Where's that?
Scotland?
Yeah.
Because they're wholesome people.
Mm.
Unfortunately, I have very poor sight, but I like to be independent. I take my life in my hands when I go out, but when somebody sees that I'm struggling to go on a bus or crossing a road, they help me. Some people just grab me and I'm afraid of who it might be, but others say, may I help you?
Mm.
I don't think I would find that anywhere. Other countries, people are afraid to speak to strangers.
Yeah.
I can only say good things. I've made good friends here. Unfortunately, many of them are no longer here.
Mm.
And I'm still making friends.
It's a good reason to make friends with people younger than you, isn't it?
Yes. Well, that's more difficult.
Yeah.
Because the younger people today don't want the older. A generation ago, 60s, 70s, yes, but not today. They're being re-educated now.
Mm. So is there any final things that you want to say before we turn this off?
I said that I'm happy in the country here.
Yes, you've said all that.
But I'm sad that my family is not here.
Mm.
I am now here alone. One is in New York, where I have four grandsons, and one is in Cambridge, who has never found the Scottish lass yet.
Okay, so thank you very much for your time.
I would like to hear it. Thank you for coming.